This is Thought Crime. I am your host, Wesley Fox, editor and proxy of PrescientSciFi.com. For this episode 48, I'm going to talk about the three shows I'm watching right now and a couple that I haven't been watching lately that I should. And also what's coming up in terms of sci-fi television in the next few months here and in the middle of the summer, and maybe some movies about what's coming up. So basically, this is an all TV movie episode. And let's begin. First off, Prynosis is my first podcast or first post of any kind in a month. February was a little busy for me. I moved. I am now in new digs. I don't know if anyone can tell, but I am in a new place right now. I don't know if the sound or anything is different or whatever. So the setup is a little different. The location's a little different, and I had to get that all situated. So that's been distracting me quite a bit. On the other side, there's been no good science fiction movies to talk about. In terms of TV, there's plenty of TV to talk about, but all the premieres and everything came in January, and I don't like, with the exception of Walking Dead, I don't like to talk just about one episode, like a season premiere. I kind of want to wait a little bit. So I wanted something more substantive to talk about, and I've picked up on a couple, two new shows, Colony and The Expanse. Now, The Expanse I've been watching for a while. This is the second season. I watched all the first season last year. It was awesome. It's an amazing show. Colony I picked up about a month ago. It also premiered in 2016 to some excellent reviews, but maybe not tremendous ratings. I don't know. It's a USA original. USA tends to do kind of more light stuff like Burn Notice, Suits, I think is USA. I can't really remember. But they usually do stuff that's kind of more of like the national channel stuff like NCIS and blah, blah, blah. So it's more like action-y and not really as in-depth and serious. They like to say they are, you know, with characters welcome, except they just time and again don't seem to deliver on that. But this is an exception. Colony is really, really good. I've enjoyed getting into it. I am almost caught up. I think I'm an episode or two behind, but it's an awesome show, and I'll get into that. I'm also watching The Expanse, which is about a few episodes into the new season. Very, very cool show. And as you've probably noticed from the blog, I still watch Star Wars Rebels, even though I complain about it constantly. I'm still watching Walking Dead, still complaining about it. I'm actually, I haven't watched any of the new mid-season episodes yet. I am going to watch them soon, so I'm a little behind on that. So those are the big shows I'm going to talk about here and a few other things. So anyway, but first, I'm going to talk a little bit of beer. And this is another area where I was slacking for a while, and I'm starting to get back on the wagon here and talk about a little bit of North Carolina beer. I'm going to talk Mad Beach American Wheat, which is a beer of the Aviator Brewing Company out of Fouquet Varina, North Carolina. Fouquet Varina is like right outside Raleigh, right in the middle of the state. Aviator's been around for, I should probably look that up before I start that sentence. Let's see. Yeah, see, this is what happens when you start you start something and you didn't really actually look up the information you're about to talk about. All right, so it's not that old. I know that for a fact. But anyway, let's just talk about the beer, since obviously I did not come prepared to talk about the brewing company. Mad Beach American Wheat is they kind of put it off as a summer beer, something for out on the beach. They add a little bit of orange peel flavor to it. I think it's probably supposed to be served with an orange slice, but it's an American wheat brewed with half barley and half white wheat. I think the color actually is a little bit darker than I would expect. This is kind of more on the MGD Budweiser scale. It doesn't look like a light beer, but it tastes, and it doesn't taste like a light beer, but it's not that heavy. It's 4.8, and it actually doesn't sit that heavy in my stomach. I've been, you know, I'm a little bit into this one already. The taste is not overwhelming. The impact, the hit, it's not very overwhelming. This is actually a pretty good summer beer if Corona and Miller Lite and those light Americans are just not enough for you. And now that I'm getting older and I'm in my 30s now, like well into my 30s, those American Lights, I can't drink anymore. They're basically water to me. And I do love Coronas, but only with a lime. And this, I mean, this is crisp. This is crisp. It has plenty of hops. It has kind of a bitter taste to the end, a little bit bitter than I prefer, but but it's very kind of something you would want when it's really hot outside or if you're at the beach, hence the name Mad Beach. So I think it kind of accomplishes what it sets out to do. It's a pretty solid, I mean, it's a good one. It doesn't look like a light, you know, beach beer. It's a little bit towards the middle on the color scale, kind of a gold, a pretty good gold color, not a yellow color, so... But anyway, that is what I'm drinking as I am doing this show right now. I wanted to share that with you. Aviator, Mad Beach, American Wheat. And cheers to you. Yeah, it's crisp. All right, anyway, back to science fiction. The show Colony's been around for like a year. Yeah, over a year. So I'm a little behind. I finally caught up on it a couple weeks ago, and I blitzed through the first season in not even 4 nights. I don't have a lot of time on my hands, so I can't really binge watch a show like a whole season in a day. I suppose I could on a certain Sundays. I could, you know, spend the whole day watching TV. I just can't really do that. The max I can really do is maybe 3 episodes in a night, so that's the best I can do. So to do a season in 4 nights is kind of a big deal for me. And anyway, I'll set up the premise. Basically, it's about the Bowman family living in Los Angeles after an alien invasion. The aliens came in, basically beat us in one day and laid down these huge silver walls dividing all these metro areas into blocks or districts. And they work alongside a group of humans that they've been basically communicating with and collaborating with the whole time. These humans, I guess, have been led to believe that there was no chance of victory. The aliens were omnipotent, and so they decided to collaborate. And so you have kind of a alien occupation, but all the enforcement and all the actual military side of it is done by humans called, and they're kind of they look like a paramilitary group in black and red helmets. They call them Red Hats. And they call the collaborators the transitional government, the transitional occupational government, yada yada. But they basically run things within these blocks, and the aliens let them do that as long as they provide resources. These resources are loaded onto spaceships and shot up to their fleet, I guess, in orbit. So that's the situation. All of humanity living under basically occupation. Occupation being carried out by a human government. Bowman is just a regular family trying to get by. Will Bowman, the father, the head of the family. There's him, his wife Katie, and the two kids, Brom, Charlie, and the daughter's name is escaping me because she really is used more as a prop. She doesn't really get hardly any screen time. I'll get back to that. Well, anyway, they find out that he was actually an FBI agent. And basically when the invasion happened, they killed everyone who had a military background, anyone in law enforcement, anyone that would be a problem, leaving only civilians and people that wouldn't fight. So Will Bowman should have been killed in the first wave. He wasn't. He hid his identity and was able to pretend he was something he was not. Well, they found out, and instead of killing him, they decide to give him a job. There is a resistance movement in the Los Angeles block, and they've charged him to. They said, "Look, we will not kill you, basically, or not put you in a labor camp far away from your family if you help us put down the resistance." The twist of it was, of course, is that his wife is involved in the resistance. So it's a very, very... The first season was very cool in that the husband, Will, is running around just trying to save himself and save his family from being put in labor camps or just being executed. And his wife is running around trying to destroy the occupational government and get back at the aliens. So that's the premise. It's, alien occupation, things like that. That's not very original. I mean, Falling Skies has a very similar premise in the sense that it's after the war, like a year after the invasion, and it's about the fight to reclaim Earth. Falling Skies includes like 3 or 4 alien species, and the writing is a little bit on the cheap side. It's not bad. Falling Skies is a good. It's a good show, but it's about military. It's more about military. It's more about war, like a revolutionary war against an invading force. Colony is different. Colony is about resistance. It's about insurgency and counterinsurgency, where the war is already over and there's really no battles being fought. This is about, you know, some of these things that happen in the show we might call terrorism, but mostly they are kind of hit-and-run attacks on government installations, on military installations, attacking the Red Hats, things like that. And the homework, and I have a little bit of background on this because I had to do research on these kind of things for a book I was writing. And I can tell you that whoever did the research and background on, you know, how an insurgency works, how counterinsurgency works, how an occupation would work, they did their homework, because you definitely see the feel of what it is to live under occupation, even though this is alien occupation, but it's, you know, has a human face. And parts of it are a little cheesy and look familiar. You know, you have red and black for the bad guys, and so there are some things in it. And there's also kind of like this secret spy double talk that some of these characters use that some people might find a little cheesy. Fine. I mean, that's fair. But overall, the story structure, the plot, the setup for the resistance, the setup for the occupational government, I mean, it's all really well thought out and really well executed. And the events and the conflict between the husband and wife, Will Bowman and Katie Bowman, one being a resistance fighter and not telling him about it, and him working for the occupation. He hates the occupation. He's only doing it because they'll kill his family. So it's just a great premise, great show. The first season was excellent, just excellent. And so far into season two is very, very good so far. Now that I'm about 15 episodes into the overall show, my feelings are starting to change a little bit about where this is going. So I'll get to that next year in a second. All right, so before I get to like kind of my criticism and start bashing this show that I'm telling you I love, it's the premise obviously is not original. Post-apocalyptic and dystopian. It has both elements, which a lot of books have now, a lot of young adult books have, a lot of TV shows and movies have, where basically they include an apocalyptic event. The movie or the show or the story takes place after that event, and there's some sort of new dystopian nightmare that has taken over the planet after this cataclysm. So a lot of stories now combine the two. Those are two really big things. So I think maybe it's kind of like a go big or go home. And I think most writers and maybe showrunners feel like they have to do that and put those two things together. Or at least writers do. I'm not sure. A lot of TV shows maybe not so much, but writers do in their novels. The problem with that, of course, is that you don't really get to examine. When you examine two things at once, they have to share attention, and it's not easy to do, because usually dystopian stories are about the dystopia. It's an examination of the flawed society, the imperfect, the negative, the bad society. Well, if part of your story is also about the apocalypse, then obviously that's going to take some attention away from that. This show is largely about the dystopian nightmare of an occupation. And you see examples of, you know, the surveillance state of kind of a police paramilitary force that is brutal, does not care about the people. You have food shortages. People have to trade. You have no freedom. There's no courts of any kind. And they could just kill you. They could just put you in a factory, in a labor camp. There's nothing you can do. There's no appeals. There's no lawyers. There's nothing. And the worst part of it is that the people doing it to you are human. They're working for the aliens, which they call raps. I'm not sure why they call them raps. I'll have to look that up. But these aliens don't really show themselves. They let the humans do the work for them, and they kind of laid the groundwork for this human-led occupational force before they even attacked, which I thought was very clever. I thought that was very cool, because that really is a better way of going about invading a planet and occupying something, is you make a deal with the collaborators and the sort of the Vichy government of France, for example, in World War II. It's like cutting a deal with the Vichy government, or, you know, what Germany did in Austria and Czechoslovakia, where you basically find sympathetic factions within these territories to work with you after you've invaded. This is stuff that historically works. Americans don't like to hear that because we live land of the free, home of the brave. This is, we live in the era of democracy, freedom, human rights, et cetera, et cetera. But, and we don't like to think that tyranny and totalitarianism works or can be effective or can be long living. We kind of feel like, you know, the bend of history is towards freedom. Maybe in the last 70 years that has been true, but for the previous 6,000 years, it was not true. And we, there's really no reason to think that the current trend we're on is just going to continue. But I digress. That's a political bullshit. Sorry. Back to the show. Anyway, the premise is just awesome. I mean, this in it, and they avoid the apocalyptic side, the invasion. They don't show you anything about the invasion until season two, which I think was brilliant. It's all about dystopia. It's all about the occupation in season one, about how the Bowmans cope with living in, and not just the Bowmans, but some of other families and individuals, that the really ridiculous moral choices they have to make to survive, because they have a choice between idealism and survival. If you want to stand up for yourself and resist, you will be killed. That's what happens. These resistance cells, you know, some of them are effective in launching attacks, but most of these resistance fighters die. And they don't, their lives, you know, their attacks don't add up to anything. At least not in the first season. And that's true of resistance and insurgencies throughout history. A lot of them die. And a lot of the times that what they're doing doesn't work. A lot of rebellions have lost. That's what I love about this show in general. Their depiction of this dystopian nightmare and the kind of facts and events and the world building is just well done, very well done. And I love the fact that they kind of sidestepped the apocalyptic side of it and left that for a few kind of like flashbacks in season two. And I think that worked extraordinarily well. And the other thing is that a lot of shows or a lot of stories in dystopians and post-apocalyptic, they kind of develop characters that are relatable, but they're basically tourists. They don't feel like they grew up in that nightmare world, you know, whether it's a dystopian, or they feel like they're, like, especially the young adult, like their characters act and sound and feel like American teenagers that are just in these nightmare scenarios. They don't feel like they grew up and developed there. They feel like they were dropped there, like tourists. In the case of Colony, like, they are all Americans. They all grew up in the U.S. and the world and the earth that we know. They've only been under occupation and under alien control for about a year. So they get away with that. They don't have to worry about that kind of dropping tourists into a nightmare. A lot of these characters do feel like there's a part of them that is part of this new nightmare that makes up their character and their actions. And then there's a part of them that remembers the good old days. And I think Colony just does a tremendous job balancing the two and showing you what happens to people that are accustomed to liberty, freedom, and having and being the masters of the universe being turned into servants. And it's very well done. Just the more basic kind of nuts and bolts, the casting is awesome. Josh Holloway, who you might know from, I think Lost, a few other things. Sarah Wayne Callies, which of course is from Walking Dead, Carl's mother, Rick Grimes' wife, Carl Weathers. If you don't know who he is, you need to go home and just think about what you've did. And some of these other characters, Jacobson, I mean, the casting is tremendous, the acting is tremendous, the directing is all solid for a cable original show on USA. The values are very high. And the production values, by the way, the special effects and the things they show you are all really well done. So, I can't just say enough about that stuff. I mean, it's really, I'm blown away. I think I am very impressed by Colony. I think it's a tremendous show. I think everyone should be watching it. It really is, if you're looking for regular action aliens, like kind of the more in the mold of Falling Sky or something like that, you might be a little disappointed because you don't get to see as much of the alien invasion as you'd want to. And this is more about people. This is more about individuals dealing with stress and occupation. And I know a lot of Americans may not like that. And a lot, maybe Westerners in general, maybe it's not an American thing. It's maybe a Westerner thing that you just, you know, you don't want to see that. You want to see rising, you want to see rebellion, you want to see, you know, people acting out. When you see that in this show, those people end up dead. because that is the historical reality of it. If you speak up in a totalitarian or an occupation, they will just shoot you. All the brave ones are dead. So everyone else learns to. And the other really interesting, fascinating thing that they will do is they will use your loved ones against you. This happens in Colony a couple times where they will say, look, we are going to ship your kids to a labor camp if you don't cooperate. We will kill your wife if you don't cooperate. We won't kill you. We won't torture you, but we will do this to your family. We will do this to your friends. We will firebomb your neighborhood. When we will tell your neighborhood, you are the reason they're being firebombed. We will tell everyone at your work that you are responsible for whatever punishment is coming down the pipe. When you do things, psychological things like that, you know, you're not punishing the actual fighter directly. You're doing it indirectly by going after what they love and things. And you will see, and you see it in this show, people stop resisting, put down their weapons to protect loved ones. And they will play ball because of that. And that is what, you know, that is what you do if you want to stop things. If you want to just kill people, you can, yeah, sure, you can just kill people. But if you really want to make someone bend to your will and obey and submit, you threaten what they love. And you make them feel like there's nothing they can do to stop you from threatening them. Unfortunately, a lot of movies, you know, the premise is they threaten what I love, so I'm going to go on a rampage, and the rampage ends with all the bad guys being killed. Well, that's a nice little fantasy, but that's in an occupation and things like that. They won't even bother threatening your family unless they know they have your family or they have your wife. And they will not wait for you to, you know, slaughter through all their henchmen before they put a gun to your wife. No, they'll just shoot her the moment you try. So there's a lot of ruthlessness captured in this show that a lot of other books, movies, TV shows of this kind of nature don't capture. And yeah, it's just awesome. So what does everyone else think? Well, I was curious. I wanted to see, because a lot of my friends and a lot of people I talk to, they don't talk about Colony. So I was wondering, like, maybe this is an underestimated or underappreciated show. And I feel like, and maybe I'm in the, you know, I'm not in the minority, but as it turns out, I kind of rate this show higher than others. The Metacritic, the Rotten Tomatoes, and kind of the viewer score of Colony, they're good. I mean, it gets good scores, but not great scores. And I feel like, the TV ratings and the people watching, it's good, but it's not great. I mean, I think it's around 1 million viewers. And so far, the second season has not been able to really increase the size of the audience. So it's not growing. It's not becoming a phenomenon. And just as a basis of comparison, The Walking Dead averages about 11 million viewers per episode. Colony has about 1 million. The Expanse has about 1 million. I'm trying to think of some other. I mean, I'm sure most of the Marvel TV shows have around 5 to 7 to 8 million. Cable news, primetime has about 5 million. So 1 million on a cable TV channel it's enough for cable, but it also means that it's not really penetrating a broader, wider scale. And I think in this case, that's unfortunate. This show is awesome. And it's underappreciated, and I do hope more people give it a chance, because it's really, there's parts of religion, indoctrination, there's brutality, there's use of torture, there's counterintelligence and intelligence. And finally, I'll finish on this, because I want to move on to the next show. The character Broussard is an intelligence operator who is one of the leads of the resistance. And when you see how he operates, how he acts, and how he is, you see someone who is flawed. He will kill people. He will kill his own kind to protect the resistance. He does not care. He will kill other humans. He doesn't have any problem with that. His goal is to annihilate the collaborators, the occupation, and end it. And he knows, and you kind of see it in the way he operates, he knows it's going to take a while. He's preparing to do this for a long period of time, and he's kind of compartmentalized and detached, and the reason is that he's been doing it for years. Before the alien invasion, he was a U.S. military, CIA, you know, et cetera, a spy, you know, kind of Jason Bourne kind of thing in Iraq and Afghanistan, Europe, Russia. You know, you don't really know, but you get the impression this guy's heavily experienced, and he's very detached and very disassociated from what he's doing. And I think he's a wonderful character. Let me, real quick, I'm going to look up who plays him, because the actor does an awesome job as well. Tori Kittles is the actor, and I'm trying to see what else he's been in. He's been in Olympus Has Fallen, Miracle at St. Anna, Get Rich or Die Trying, Malibu's Most Wanted, Phone Booth, Phone Booth, he was just a really small role. So, no, American Heist, Olympus Has Fallen, Steel Magnolias, 2012. I don't know about that. He was in True Detective. That's interesting. So he's he's a TV, mostly a TV star, but, not quite. I don't know. Good balance, but great work for him. So, all right, I'll finish off by saying Colony is an awesome show. It is on USA. It's about five, six episodes into season two here. It is amazing. It's better than Falling Skies. So I highly recommend it. Go watch it right now. Okay, show number two is The Expanse on Sci-Fi Channel. And really, it was one of the first shows that kind of, it was part of this new wave of original programming from Sci-Fi Channel that I was just really, really psyched about, because I think it was 2 years ago, 2014, 2015, there was no real science fiction represented on television. It was it was either really second or third or fourth rate quality, or it was superheroes, which, you know, if you watch enough of it, it's not really, there's not any real plausible science in it. It might as well be fantasy. The Expanse was based on a book by a book series, The Expanse series, by, I think it's Dan Abraham and Ty Frank, but combined they call themselves, the author name is James S.A. Corey. And I think I've mentioned this a few other blogs and podcasts, but the original, the first novel, which is what the first season's based on, Leviathan Wakes, is not really a particularly good novel. It's average to above average. The series, the Expanse series, what I'm told is that the books get better. Book 2, 3, and 4 get better. The TV show is really good. It's production values, it's realism, and the things they show, and it's true to the book in most ways. And it's, I mean, really quickly, the premise is it's about 200-300 years in the future. Humanity has colonized Mars. It's colonized a number of moons around Jupiter and Saturn, and a number of other planetoids throughout the solar system. And so the solar system is really the world, is our human realm now, not just Earth. There's also the moon, and of course, and probably stations. There's space stations all over the place. And the premise of the show begins with a character by the name of Julie Mao being infected with some sort of proto-molecules, what they're calling it. And season one spoiler, that the proto-molecule they believe is extraterrestrial. And so it's kind of, but that's just part of it. There's all sorts of kind of solar system politics going on between Earth, Mars, and the Belters. And the Belters are basically people that grew up and live along the outer belt of asteroids and on the moons of Jupiter and et cetera. So there's, you know, the Ceres, Eros, there's Tycho Station, there's like a bunch of other things going on, but they're floating beyond Mars and Earth. Mars is a military power. It's called the Mars Congressional Republic. So they're considered a significant power. So a lot of humans are now on Mars. It's not terraformed, so it's not safe to be walking around Mars without spacesuit. So that's the status. And so you kind of have this interplay of politics. This proto-molecule is being studied by this small group. They believe they need to find a way to obviously prevent what it's trying to do. It is some sort of, it's not just a virus, it's something bigger. And they're hiding it from Earth, they're hiding it from Mars, and Earth and Mars are kind of, there's this tension. So when these things start happening, they start accusing each other of being behind these events, and it unfolds, et cetera, et cetera. Great, it is a great show. The premise is pretty unique, not really done before. If it has, it's not very familiar to me. The production values are very high. It has a good cast. It has Thomas Jane, Stephen Strait, Dominique Tipper, and more. These three key characters, Dominic Tipper, I don't think any American viewers will be familiar with, but I think she's been on a lot of British shows, and I think she might have been on Doctor Who. Stephen Strait, I'm not familiar with. Thomas Jane, I think people will know from Hung, which was on Cinemax, I guess. Basically, it was a TV show about a man with a giant penis and his coping with, you know, the struggles of being a man with a giant phallus. I mean, it's a tough life. It really is, you know. I guess he became a gigolo. I don't know. I didn't watch the show, but that was the name of the show. But obviously, he does not play that character in this movie, or in this show. He is a kind of washed-out, kind of noir detective, and a little bit of cliche. Stephen Strait's like this kind of good guy on a salvage ship. And I mean, so some of the characters and some of the things that play out, you know, among the characters and among the plot are a little cliche and a little predictable. But the broader world, the broader kind of conflict and story arc is actually on the more original side. But yeah, some of the pieces, not so original. So that show is kind of into season two, about five episodes. The last episode, some very big things happened. And I think it's well done. And I think you're seeing a pretty good story progress. In contrast to Colony, I think Colony season two, I think viewers are starting to get a little depressed and worn out by watching a show about an occupation and oppression. And there doesn't seem to be any hope of getting out of it. Whereas Expanse, things are happening, and there's, you know, victories, there's progress. And I think that's why Expanse at least is more positive. You feel better after watching Expanse, and it's more entertaining and more thrilling. Colony is maybe starting to wear you down a little bit, and that's I think that's why it might be struggling a little bit. So the, kind of contrasting the two shows, once you're into season two, and you have kind of a dark premise, like post-apocalyptic dystopian, you can't go that long in that kind of dark, you know, things are bad, you know, for too long. I am glad they did it for season one, but I think at some point, I think Colony is going to have to give their audience hope. Expanse does that. It gives you hope every time. And even though some terrible things happen in the show, you kind of feel like there's a way out. You just, these characters can do it. These, you know, it's going to happen. So they're kind of both halfway through their season. I think both shows are excellent. I think they both deserve season, you know, a third season. The Expanse, I think Metacritic and critic scores are about the same as Colony, but I think the audience and the user scores for Expanse are better than Colony. And I think it's for the reason I just laid out. Expanse is a bit more positive. They give you more kind of victories, even if they're small and temporary to the audience. Colony doesn't really give you much victory. It's usually just, oh, great, another day we didn't die. So both shows, and ratings-wise, I think both of them are about equal. I think they're both pretty solid for cable channels, 1 million viewers on average, or 800,000 or whatever. So nothing, you know, neither of them are really breaking through into a broader, neither of them are cult classics. Neither of them are really penetrating the broader kind of nerdy science fiction general audience. I think they both have some very committed and loyal and highly motivated audiences, but it's just not spreading. And that's unfortunate. Both shows are excellent. Expanse is very good. It has its flaws. It has some things that, you know, sometimes when they speak in their weird Belter language, I have no idea what they're saying. And it's not even a foreign language. They're speaking in English, but it's all like slang and combining, or maybe they do combine English with other languages. And there's also maybe some things that happen that seem a little, you know, I don't want to say deus ex machina, but just kind of things just happen in Expanse. Small things, not big. So I can, and you know, it's not futuristic enough. It's not interstellar. It's not faster than light travel. The aliens are not, you know, green men or gray, or they're not Klingons. And kind of the political intrigue is good, but it's not, you know, it's not Game of Thrones or House of Cards good. So I think maybe Expanse, it does maybe have some shortcomings, and Colony does as well, as I've discussed. So, but still, both shows to me, for what they do, are much better than The Field, in my opinion. And I really hope that more viewers give both of those shows a chance, because they deserve it. Colony in particular, but also Expanse. I mean, these are two very high quality shows that I think nerds and geeks and everyone, like especially hardcore sci-fi, they should be watching this stuff. It's really, really good. All right, I saved the show, the next two shows, for the ones that I'm a little bit tougher on, or the ones that I think I'm just not excited about anymore, or I'm less excited. The first one is Star Wars Rebels, which I've talked about a couple times on previous podcasts. So we're basically, we've gotten a pretty full picture of what the Season 3 arc is. And I can tell you right now, there is no Season 3 arc. Out of the 16 episodes, I think about 12 of them are self-contained adventures, and out of the other four, nothing really happens. Not just for the show, but for the broader Star Wars saga, there's really nothing in Season 3 that happens, and I think that's what makes Rebels basically just a cartoons. Clone Wars, I think, extended itself beyond just its kid, you know, its kiddie audience, because there's things that happened in Clone Wars that mattered. They were important, and they showed you kind of insights and glimpses into the characters of the movie saga and of the broader kind of expanded universe, and showed you a little bit more of these very, very important people. And also some things the movies won't show you, or the books, you know, they were only in the books. Rebels did a little bit of that in Season 2. And obviously the biggest moment of the show to date is the duel between Darth Vader and Ahsoka Tano, the master-apprentice duel, which is arguably what the highlight is of Star Wars every 2 to 3 movies, master versus former apprentice. That is kind of the way of things, how things go. It's the progression of youth to old, young, you know, old to new, the new generation, the new progress, the new age. It's how the arc advances itself. And it was a wonderful, it was a great moment, powerful, and obviously emotionally for a lot of us who like Ahsoka Tano's character, but also know and obviously are very, very familiar with Darth Vader and Anakin. I mean, it was a big moment, the biggest moment of the show. They have not been able to match that since then. Not even close. The whole thing with Darth Maul just never doesn't do much. Darth Maul should be dead anyway. The Night Sisters thing was interesting with the Darksaber, which happened a few episodes ago, and them discovering the Darksaber and how it has an attachment to House Vizsla and Sabine Wren. But those things they're low to mid-level impact. They're not really big. They're not big deals. And Sabine Wren, I'm sorry. Sabine started off as a fascinating character, but they just waited until now to develop her in the recent few episodes. We had to wait this long for her to be developed, and there's really just some conflicts and contradictions in her character because they can't afford to do much with her because it's a kid's show. So really developing Sabine Wren, and it sounds like they can't go any farther. They're done. Sabine Wren's going to stay on Mandalore. And sorry, that was a spoiler. But that's where the show is. Sabine Wren has chosen to stay on Mandalore and lead her family and try to have Mandalore leave the Empire. I mean, it's just, it's not big enough. It's not important enough. I mean, for kids watching a cartoon, it gets the job done, which is why Star Wars Rebels consistently gets about 400,000 or 500,000 viewers, which is half of The Expanse or half of Colony. Granted, it's on Disney XD. Granted, it's a cartoon. Granted, it's mostly for kids, so it's never going to be a big show. But I really feel like because it has the name Star Wars attached to it, I don't think Disney, and I don't think in general all of us should be thinking that, oh, you can just make a Star Wars cartoon and have it have shitty ratings and, you know, just be for kids. This is the flagship property of Disney, and I'm pretty sure they're not happy with a TV show built on that property basically performing at bare minimum level. And as a fan of Star Wars, I have to agree. I think this show just doesn't do anything. It's a placeholder, and it's really sad. They have a few episodes left. Obviously, based on the trailers, we're going to see an Obi-Wan Darth Maul duel. There's just been erratic, inconsistent, and hardly any build up to that. So if that's what they think is going to save this season, I don't know. I don't know if that could save the season or save this show, because frankly, I think the whole show is in trouble. I've been hearing rumors on the blogs, and I think some fans are speculating. I don't have any inside information. I'm not an entertainment journalist. But there's some writing on the walls that Star Wars Rebels might be winding down. Season 3 could be it, or maybe Season 4 is it. This is not Clone Wars. It clearly is not having the same success as Clone Wars, or at least the impact Clone Wars had. And it's too bad, but that's the other show I've been watching. It's just not been... It's not doing for me what Clone Wars did, and I think the broader Star Wars fandom is just written it off as a kiddie cartoon. It's really too bad, you know. I'd love to know what happened to Ahsoka, because the impression we all have is that she's not dead. But here we are 16 episodes later, and not even a hint of what happened to her. Moving on from Star Wars Rebels, I'll go to a fourth show that I have not watched anything in 2017 yet, and that is Walking Dead. There are two new episodes into the second part of Season 7, and you've already heard me in previous podcasts and blogs kind of criticize Season 7 as a disappointment and as something that is just demonstrating that this show needs to start thinking about wrapping itself up. Seven seasons is a lot of seasons. And they're clearly starting to run out of narrative power. I haven't watched the two new episodes yet. I've been told they're much better and that they do kind of make up for the first seven episodes of the season. I hope they do, and I do hope that it kind of reinvigorates me a little bit, but I still hold to my opinion that Walking Dead should really be working towards a big conclusion, a big close, a season eight that just kicks our ass and just makes us cry or makes us everything, laugh, cry, whatever. That's what season 8, or maybe, I'm realistic. I realize they're probably going to ride this thing until season 10 because of the ratings. Even though Walking Dead has dropped from, you know, averaging 14-15 million viewers per episode to about 10 million after the brutal, you know, pounding of Glenn and Abraham. And also just the fact this season has not impressed most of the fans. I still believe at 10 million viewers, you're probably going to run this show out until 9, 10 seasons. I hope they don't, but I'm realistic. That's probably what they're going to do. They're at season 7 now. We already know we're going to have a season 8, but I would be working towards a big close. But just to suffice to say, I've not seen the first two episodes of this new year. I've been told they're good. I've been told they're better, and they're doing some of the things that the show should have been doing in the first seven episodes, so... That's where that show is, but those are the three. Those are the big four that are on my radar: Colony, Expanse, Star Wars Rebels, Walking Dead. All right, now time to look forward. The other shows I watch that religiously are Vikings and Game of Thrones. Vikings just had its finale of its season. Game of Thrones is not going to premiere until the fall, I believe, because they had to do some shooting in the winter, and. But that's fantasy, so I don't like to talk about fantasy too much on this podcast, but those are the two big shows, and they're not going to be around for a while. So Vikings is done for this season. Game of Thrones, we're probably 8 months away from that, 6 months away. So what's coming down the pipeline in the meantime? Well, one of the big ones I'm excited about is Handmaid's Tale, which I'm just psyched about. That novel is a classic. It's something that, frankly, everyone should read. It's a great, great, great novel, and I'm glad they're making a TV show out of it. I'm not sure if it could have worked as a movie. Maybe it could have. I could see a movie out of it. But I am glad that it's being brought to life. I don't think enough people, especially in the younger generation, have read it, and I really think they should. So I'm very glad that is being, and I can't wait for it. I have some high expectations for it. The other big show coming up is American Gods, which is based on the Neil Gaiman novel. That's on the fantasy side of it, but Neil Gaiman is a big fucking deal. And I have read a couple of his works, and I do appreciate his creativity, his style, and his ability to really capture you. He's not my favorite author, but I definitely understand why he has a lot of fans. And I think this American Gods thing, I think the idea behind it, the season, the show, the whole setup, I think it could work. I think it could be very cool. Of course, Star Trek Discovery, we're still waiting on. We don't know when it's coming. It could be the summer. It could be the fall. I tend to think it will be summer now that we know more about the cast and we're starting to get some leaks about what this show is going to be about. And Of course, it's Star Trek. It's one of the key flagship franchises of the science fiction genre in America. And so that is obviously still big on our minds right now. All right, moving to movies. January and February, as usual, January and February are usually kind of like the dumpster months for movies, especially for the, you know, science fiction and fantasy. You go back to 16, 15, 14, last few years, and the movies that come out in January and February, they almost always bomb, and they're almost always junk, and I think the production and big houses, they know it. And that's why they put them out in these winter months, because they don't expect much from them, and these are the months that you know, you just don't get the big ticket sales. So anyway, that's my kind of thought on it. And true to form, we haven't seen anything in the last 2 months that's worth a damn. But March, things turn around. We have Ghost in the Shell, Logan, Kong, Skull Island, and Life. Ghost in the Shell, I cannot wait for. I am very excited about this. I understand the casting controversies of having Scarlett Johansson play what is supposed to be a Japanese character. But Ghost in the Shell, I think this could be the game changer. I mean, it could be really special. The animated version of the movie from 17 years ago is special. And to cross over something that is such a big deal in Japan to the United States, and it has a committed fan group here in the U.S., but I think the broader American viewership is in for a real special thing here. I think Ghost in the Shell, I mean, it really could be great. It's and I'm very positive about it. I've heard good things. I can't wait. I think that could be very special. And casting controversy aside, Logan premieres in a week and already is getting insanely good critical reviews, but I am just, my expectations for the entire X-Men franchise are pretty low. I just think the power of the narrative and the X-Men universe, the comic books, all the wonderful stories, I think they're wasted and have been just not properly done throughout most of the movies. Not all of them, but most of them, I think, have been underwhelming to me. And I think a lot of the movies have been underwhelming to the fans and to the viewers. So I'm not alone on that, with some exceptions. So when I saw the premise for Logan, and yes, it has Hugh Jackman. Yes, it has Patrick Stewart, who is my idol. And it's about the future, and I don't know where it is in the timeline. I don't know what it's supposed to be. And so it's, so far, the critics seem to love it. They think this might be special, and this might be something that is a good way to end this thing, end the Logan, the Hugh Jackman Wolverine on a high note. I hope so. I think that'd be great. I'm just, it's hard for me to get my expectations too high on that. But that is March 3rd. That premieres. So far, some of the early reviews are very strong, so it could be, you know, it could be something special. And I will go see it, and I will talk about it. So that's coming up very soon. The next one, Kong Skull Island, is more of a little bit more on the fantasy side. I love monster movies. I thought Godzilla was awesome, the most recent Godzilla movie. The King Kong movie was too long. It was a good movie. I liked it in the end, but I was just exhausted 30 minutes before the movie ended. So this new one, Tom Hiddleston and Brie Larson and Samuel Jackson, and I don't know. It has all the makings of a bomb to me. Or just something like a Michael Bay style movie. So I mean, if that's all they're trying to go for, I think they'll entertain people. It'll make money, but I won't get too. I'm just not too excited about a movie like that. But that does premiere here in March, and so people who want to see the giant ape, you're gonna see it. The final movie is Life, about space station. Finds extraterrestrial life, and it turns out to be dangerous. Yeah, that's been done about 5,000 times, and this one has Jake Gyllenhaal, whatever, and Ryan Reynolds, or somebody, I don't know. But the premise is overdone, and the presentation and the trailer and everything looks like it's just going to be something we've seen 500 times. There's nothing so far that they've shown us that would make anyone to believe, whether you're a fan or not, or whether you're a general audience or not, that this movie is in any way special. And I feel like the production companies know it. because there's just not a lot of buzz around this movie. And I think, maybe in the next few weeks they'll ramp it up. Maybe we'll see a change. Maybe that's what they're planning. You know, they wanted to be subtle and kind of low under the radar, and then in, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they're going to lead in with this huge advertising campaign. I don't know. But as of now, that's what it looks like. So my big one for the month of March is Ghost in the Shell. I cannot wait for that one. I am psyched about that one. Logan is getting some attention and getting a lot of reviews. Could be excellent. I'm going to stay cautiously optimistic, but Logan could be awesome. Kong Skull Island, whatever. You know, if you're into that thing, you'll probably enjoy that movie. Life, bleh. So, anyway, that covers everything. Movies, TV, everything I wanted to talk about today. It's been a month since my last podcast, and it's also been a month since I've posted anything on PressingSciFi.com. I've been moving, I've been busy, and I know I need to get back on track to satisfy my vast audience of, I don't know, 10 listeners. But I definitely want to get back on this and start talking to myself again and keep going. The next episode, I'm going to talk to, we'll see about a movie review of Logan. I think that's what it's going to be. And that is next weekend. And I'll see about putting that together. And who knows, maybe Microsoft Matt will join me. So if it's not Logan, it'll probably be a little bit more about, it'll probably be Ghost in the Shell. That would have to be the next one, because I'm going to talk about, even if Microsoft Matt is not here to talk about it, I will talk about it. Because I'm really looking forward to that movie. So anyway, that will be the next episode. It should be in only a week. I will not make you wait a month again. I am all set here. I got my equipment. I got my setup. I'm all situated and ready to go. So I have no excuses now. And I will leave it at that. So that will do it for me here at Thought Crime. Until next time.